Welcome to the Good Morning Santa Clarita. How is everybody? I hope everybody's fine on this beautiful rainy day and you didn't get tortured like we did over at Action. The ranch got floods and the office got flooded. It's been a fun couple of days, so I hope everybody's safe. Anyways, welcome to the Action Drug Rehab Hour. I'm Kerry Quashin. I am your host. The last few weeks, well, for years actually, I've been screaming about the fentanyl crisis and what's coming. And sadly, what it's one of those kind of things that I wish I was not right. I wish it was not true, but it's here now, and now you can't deny it. It's in our faces, and it's killing more people in this country than anything else. I'm going to just do a real quick little deal here. On March 13th, we're having a candlelight vigilance in remembrance of the families. Over 30 families that we lost in the last year right here alone in Santa Clarita. One's too many. 30's way too, it's unacceptable. We have to do something about it. So we're going to do a candlelight vigilance at the Real Life Church along with Action Drug Rehabs and KHTS in remembrance of that, and hopefully educate our community and every community about the deadly Russian roulette or pill roulette or whatever you want to call it, or poisoning that's going on out there. So about, a couple years ago, I was going through my Facebook, and I saw a friend of mine post something that just, it took the air out of me. It literally, it took the air out of me because I did not know what was happening, and it was one of my good friends. And I remember speaking to him on the phone, it's just one of the saddest things that I had to deal with. Sadly, after that, I've had to deal with it many, 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 many times. So, Jaime, he's my friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, and he's like my brother, and I love him lots. And tell him your story a little bit, and then we'll get into what's going on. I have no plans for the show, so it's like, just do what you want to do.
My name is Jaime Puerta. I lost my son, Daniel Puerta Johnson, to a fentanyl poisoning on April the 6th of 2020. I basically walked into his room on April the 1st and found him practically deceased. We called 911. They first took him to Henry Mayo Hospital, and then a team of specialists from Los Angeles Children's Hospitals came up to Henry Mayo, picked them up, and took him down there. But the diagnosis from the doctors was all pretty, it wasn't good. He would, his brain had gone too much time without any kind of oxygenization. So he had no oxygen, so he was in a deep, deep coma, and there was nothing they could do to bring him back. So
I keep telling to people, I remember saying to people in the past that I know how it feels. I don't know how it feels. I got kids. I can never know how it feels unless it happens.
On April the 5th, that evening, Denise and I spent the next 5-6 days with him, getting ready to say our goodbyes, because that's what we were doing, basically. And Denise climbed in bed with him, and they disconnected all life-saving support on the April the 6th at approximately 3:45 in the afternoon. Denise, his biological mom, jumped in bed with him and started caressing his beautiful face and his hair, and I held his hand, and he took his last breath at 5:08 of that afternoon, and he died. And, it's something that no parent should ever have to go through.
But sadly,
we went through it. But it's not only my family. There's thousands upon thousands upon thousands nationwide. And it's an epidemic that most people had absolutely no idea about, especially back in 2020 when this first happened to Daniel. And only afterwards when I had found out, because I had found half the pill that he had consumed.
I want you all to listen to that. He took a half a pill.
He took half a pill.
A half a pill that he thought was something else.
At the very height of the pandemic, right? Daniel, I suppose, was probably having a mental crisis of some sort. All the kids were, we were all locked in, and it was... I think the pandemic had, I blame the pandemic for.
You know what I mean? What happened is we had a stay-at-home order.
Yep.
People that were drinking didn't stop drinking. They drank more.
Right.
People that were depressed got more depressed. People that had anxiety had more anxiety. People that used drugs used more drugs. People that had no coping skills, or even some of the youngsters that didn't really know how to deal with this loneliness and craziness, went to try to get loaded and numb the feelings.
Exactly.
So it exploded. Now, I don't know that the world could have done anything different, but when it comes to mental health and substance abuse, it just wasn't thought of at the time. You know, so it became a national crisis. I would say national. It was a global crisis.
A global crisis, but being that we are such a we're a society, I think an over-medicated society, where, you know, children see their parents taking pills for a whole host of reasons. Not that I'm saying that they shouldn't, but I don't think there's any other country in the world that takes as much medication as we do. And you just turn on daytime TV and you'll see it right there, right? But Daniel reached out to a drug dealer on Snapchat. We feel the pill was delivered to him 3 blocks from our home, right down by Plum Canyon Elementary School. And he brought that pill home. And he decided that he wanted to consume half of it, and that killed him.
I remember that. There was a text that a girl had sent him that said, be careful, and he says, I already checked it out. I know what I'm doing.
I only came to find it.
The only reason I'm saying that is because I deal with people. You know what I do for a living. I run rehabs, and I fly all over the country doing stuff like you do. But all these people that I'm dealing with think they're smarter than the drug. And what I've got to say to everyone out there, nobody's smarter than this drug.
Well, let's talk about this drug.
Let's talk about that text, because what did he say?
The text message was between him and a friend, and he thought, Daniel thought, that he was taking a pharmaceutical-grade oxycodone, 30 milligrams. That's what he thought what he was taking, but what he actually took was a cloned pill, a fake pill made of binder and fentanyl. And it killed them. And that's what's part of the problem is. It's not part of the problem. It's the large swath of the population. I mean, if you think about it, for the first time since World War II, the average lifespan of every single man, woman, and child between the ages of 11 to 50 years of age has actually decreased due specifically to fentanyl. Think about that, since World War II. Mm-hmm. Fentanyl poisoning and fentanyl overdoses, and there's a clear distinction between the two, which we can talk about in a minute, is that it is now killing more people than suicide, cancer, car accidents, and gun violence. That's how fentanyl is affecting our society. But due to the stigma of addiction and overdose, most people feel, or most families feel, that this could not happen to their family. And that's where they're making a very, very lethal mistake, because if it can happen to my family and the thousands upon thousands of other families that I know of firsthand, it can happen to them as well.
I was in Lowe's with a friend of mine about three months ago, and there was a guy in front of me in line, and he says, "You're Kerry Quashen." I went, "Yes." He gave me a hug. And he says, "Thank you." And I said, "Thank you for?" And he says, "For trying to save my kid." He said he had 2 years sober, and he decided to buy some drugs. And what he thought he bought, he didn't buy. And he ended up dying. You know, Jaime, do you know how many people have said that to me in the last couple of years?
Well, let's look. I mean, 2020.
I mean, just to me.
Not just to you, but if you look at the average numbers. And mind you, my son didn't even show up as a fentanyl poisoning on his death certificate.
Right. It
came as major organ failure, possible drug toxicity. So he doesn't even show up as a statistic with the Los Angeles coroner's office as a fentanyl poisoning or overdose.
So it doesn't even count as one of the people that lost his life. That's what I'm doing. Over 100,000 people.
So let me
double that at least.
And okay, well, yeah, easily.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So I mean, in 2020, we had 94,000 drug deaths in the United States. 75% of them were all due to fentanyl poisonings, overdoses, or due to fentanyl analogs. In 2021, we had 107,662 drug deaths in the United States. 80,214 of those drug deaths were all related to fentanyl poisonings, overdoses, or to fentanyl analogs.
Give that number again.
80,214.
Due to?
Fentanyl analogs. due to those two. And we're talking about 10,000. Well, that's a whole different discussion. But there's 10,000 different types of analogs for fentanyl.
That's a different show. Yeah. But just for people to understand this, this is the message that I want to give out. I know that we were really serious and we were pushing for Narcan in schools, and we did a press conference, and I think we accomplished that.
Yes.
Now the next thing, I want it everywhere, though. I want it in I'll be right back to where we are. I want it everywhere. I want it in every restaurant, library, every public place there is, because it's going to save lives, and we know that. Just having it in schools already saved many. But the people that are dying, and folks, please listen to me. This is why I say you're not smarter than the drug, and you can't be. Almost every one of those deaths that Jaime's talking about, somebody didn't go online and order fentanyl. They went online and ordered what?
Oxycodone, Percocet. College students are ordering Adderall, Vicodin.
Cocaine,
and well,
crystal meth.
The crystal meth is a different chemical makeup than it was before. You should know this. Three-day psychosis and eating flesh.
But it's worse than that. I'm getting people that are coming in for crystal meth, and I'm detoxing them for
fentanyl.
Damn right.
Well, let me
explain
this to me. So you run every
crystal meth is a freaking amphetamine. They're putting depressants in.
Every Tuesday night, you have teen night, right?
Every Tuesday.
And you have to what? You have to drug test them, right?
Of course.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Most of these kids have never even heard of fentanyl or have not taken fentanyl. Out of the urine analysis that you are taking from both these boys and girls who are going to our high schools in the William S. Hart Union School District, what's the percentage of those kids that you have found fentanyl in them?
It's low, but it's there.
How much?
I don't know the number, but here's what I do know. Even if the marijuana that they're using isn't cut with fentanyl, a lot of the marijuana, I learned this at the DEA thing, a lot of the marijuana right now, the cartel is undercutting what we're selling it for in our places. So it's coming in also now in the country. And a lot of that has been contaminated with fentanyl.
Well, and that's a whole other discussion. We're talking about the cannabis industry and how overly regulated it is,
right, but
and how expensive it is.
Yeah, but what you're saying is the kids. Yes, we're getting kids that are taking what you call ecstasy or meth or cocaine or pills, and it's showing up for fentanyl, and they had no freaking clue they ever bought fentanyl. And that's the drug that I'm telling you. If you're making chocolate chip cookies and you put too many chocolate chips, what happens? It tastes really good. Jaime, who's making these pills?
Well, at first it was just the Sinaloa cartel and the CJNG.
So it's not chemists.
So no, they're not chemists. We're talking about the most powerful cartels in Mexico. But as of late, the Drug Enforcement Administration, Los Angeles County, and Los Angeles Police Department have also found drug labs right here in Southern California. And if you think about it, you can go on to Amazon right now, buy a pill press, buy a kilo of fentanyl, which costs about $15,000.
On the dark web, easily.
You can get it straight sourced from China, if you'd like. And an investment of about $20,000 or $25,000 is going to turn a profit of $1.2 million in 1 year, which is why so many people are doing this. They don't care about your children. They don't care about the people that die. For them, it's just a cost of business for those people who die. Right? Because it's just so inexpensive to make. A one pill can cost 5 cents to make. And they're selling them for $4 or $5. What kid does not have $4 or $5? And what kid does not have the cell phone to go onto Snapchat and connect with the drug dealer to buy this?
I got hit up on Facebook.
Yeah, a lot of Facebook,
and they know what I do.
We must understand that our children are going to be children. And they're either going to want to self-medicate because of some kind of emotional trauma that they may have had in the past, a stressful situation, really stressful, where they don't have the coping skills to take care of it, or that peer pressure from other friends, or they just want to try drugs for the first time. But this is, if anything, this is the most important message.
Or they learned it from home.
The most important message that we have to tell our kids today, and not that I condone drug use, But I almost feel bad for this generation of children because they'll never be able to experiment. Because if they experiment, they are playing with their lives.
There's no recreational drugs.
There are no recreational drugs. Now, you cannot take any kind of chances whatsoever because fentanyl is in absolutely everything. And I'm not trying to be the Grim Reaper here. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you as a dad who has given conferences across this nation and spoken to thousands upon thousands of parents and a lot of these kids, believe it or not, you know, straight-A students. If you look at Zachary Didier up in Placer County, you know him as well,
yep.
Carrie.
Yep.
Been accepted to five different colleges, complete, you know, Stanford, UCLA, and other colleges, on the track team, drama club.
I mean, look at the rock stars that are dying. Well, they're falling out of everything.
Prince, Tom Petty, Mac Miller, Little Peep, you know, but the reason why we're not talking about this is because most people feel when they hear of a drug theft like this, the first thing that comes to mind is that person must have died because they were addicted to drugs.
Right. Right.
But what they don't understand is that the grand majority of the kids that are dying, again, were not drug addicts. Mm. And I'm not making excuses for them. That's just a plain fact.
You're right. And that's why we're saying there's no such thing as experimenting with drugs today.
That's correct.
Because everything is dangerous.
And exactly.
I'm going to bring you right back. But even for the marijuana, we legalize, and I have to say this, we legalize marijuana. Okay, I get it. But what we didn't take in consideration when we legalized marijuana, how do you use marijuana? You smoke it. What are they selling in vape shops? They're selling oils, vapes, edibles, these things. Now, on a joint or a bong hit, you take a hit. Years ago, it was like 0.3 milligrams of THC. That's the drug that gets you high. Now it's up in the 20s, right? Edibles are a freaking 100% THC. I'm putting more kids, y'all better listen to this, in psych wards and adults from THC-induced psychosis than I am crystal meth in this last year.
That's absolutely crazy.
Just so you hear that.
That's just crazy.
Now we can get back to where we're going. That's a different show.
That's a whole different show. We could talk about the whole cannabis industry.
Well, yeah, and we're going to, but just not today.
Yeah.
But just to real quickly, and then we'll go back to where Jaime was. So, okay, right before the pandemic, do you remember what was going on? Every time you turn on the news, they were talking about a different epidemic. It was opiates. Right before the pandemic. So every time it was all over the place that there's too many opioid addicts, that doctors are prescribing too many pills, then bang, pandemic came. And also, bang, they realized, oh my goodness, these opiates are addictive.
Well,
DEA got involved. The medical association got involved, and they decided they weren't going to write prescriptions anymore the way they did.
And that first happened through the Veterans Administration.
That's where it started.
That's where it started. All of the warriors, all of the warriors who were coming back from the theater of war,
and some that really needed it.
Yeah, they're coming back with the most horrific injuries imaginable. You know, so, loss of limbs and everything else.
So check it out. This is a normal prescription. 90 pills with 3 refills.
Yeah.
Stopped.
Well, just think about when you went to go get your tooth pulled. How many oxycodone?
90 pills.
They gave you 90 pills. What are you going to do with 90 pills?
So exactly. So, and we'll talk about that in a second. Because, so boom, they stopped getting them. The doctors aren't writing them anymore. Where were the drug dealers getting prescriptions? Where were they getting the drugs to sell? They were going doctor shopping, and they were sending people to doctors. And they had connections in pharmacies and other kinds of stuff. But now everything stopped. DEA was checking every pill that was sold in pharmacies. The doctors were afraid to write them. And then they came up with another program called the CARES program. You know what that is, right?
Yes, I do.
That is, if Jaime wants a prescription, he goes to the doctor. They type his name in this little computer, a national database, and it tells every prescription that this person had. So no more doctor shopping. So the supply right in the beginning of the pandemic was cut, boom, like that. The demand was higher than ever in history.
We had 25 million addicted Americans to opioids in the year 2014, right?
Mm-hmm.
The administration, to no fault of his own, under Barack Obama, to no fault of his own, saw that there was an epidemic of considerable proportions that needed to be dealt with. They handcuffed the orthopedic surgeons, the DOs, physicians, surgeons on how many opioids can be prescribed out. So they cut the supply off, but they never did anything about the people who were already addicted to the opioids. And guess what happened?
I know what happened.
The cartels, seeing it. The cartel said, well, I got an idea. Well, why don't we just start pressing our own pills?
And China said, what an opportunity.
And then China says, well, you know what? We can make these own pills. Well, what they did is, you know, long story short, it's a criminal organization or cooperation between the Chinese triads and the Mexican cartels. The triads sold the fentanyl until 2017 when Peter Navarro, the chief of staff under the Trump administration, went to China, brokered a deal with Xi Jinping. They scheduled fentanyl, so it was illegal to make fentanyl, but they did not schedule the precursors like AANP4. So what the Chinese triad started doing, they started selling AANP4 to the Mexican cartels, taught them how to make the fentanyl, sold them the molds of all of these pharmaceutical grade pills, and our nation started getting flooded by
it's a
this
billion-dollar operation.
That's more than $1 billion. Yeah. It's the cartels have never made this much money. There's no other drug that has caused so much chaos, destruction, and mayhem as fentanyl. Because for the first time ever, the cartels were able to reach a segment of society that was always out of reach to them, and that was the clean person, the clean user, the kids, the children who were struggling with emotional or physical trauma, the kids who wanted to experiment for the first time.
Accidental addicts,
the
because
accidental
of surgery
addicts.
And operations
Correct.
And medical problems
exactly.
and back pains and knee pains and everything, all of a sudden can't get it anymore. So where are they going to get it?
It's
gone. Running. Where are they going to get it?
According to Bill Bodner.
And we're going to talk about that when we take a break.
Okay.
This is your Action Drug Rehab Hour. I'm Kerry Quashin, along with Jaime Porta, my good friend, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Action Drug Rehab Hour. I'm Kerry Quashin. I am your host. And you know, lately, I've been doing a lot of shows on fentanyl and loss of life and all that kind of stuff. A couple that are with success stories. And I don't want everyone to think, wow, it's all grim and dark and ugly out there. Because it's not. But when it comes to the drug industry, it is.
Yes.
And as we were saying earlier, and you said something that I'm going to say too, kids are definitely getting cheated right now in this environment because you can't experiment with drugs anymore.
These are not the drugs of the 80s or 90s. These aren't the drugs that I had when I was growing up.
No.
Let me tell you something. I graduated out of Burbank High School in 1980. If this stuff was around back in 1980.
I got sober in 1980.
95% of the class of Burbank High would be gone. And I'm not over-exaggerating.
No. And you know what I've been saying for the last couple of years, and you've heard me say this, anybody out there experimenting with these kinds of drugs won't be alive in 2 years.
And if they don't die, they become addicted immediately.
Yeah.
It's 50 to 100 times stronger than morphine or heroin. The addicting properties of fentanyl are so great that it's not a 30-day rehab. We're talking about 1 year, 2 year stints.
You know what we're doing now, starting in 2 weeks? We're opening what you call MAT services.
Medically assisted.
And we're gonna help people stay on, we're going to give them
Suboxone.
Subutex, which are shots in your stomach and pills that every month you come and get. And they stay on it for about 8 months to a year. Because what we're finding is a lot of these people that are dying today been in rehabs.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens, they go through rehab. The hardest thing about getting clean and sober is this. If somebody comes into rehab because of fentanyl or heroin, so in their brain, they're a heroin or a fentanyl addict. Means they can smoke weed or drink in their mind. If they're coming in there for vodka, in their minds, they can drink wine or smoke weed.
I see.
So what we're trying to tell people, it will always bring you back to your love. So it's all or none. Because when we're young, we all have what you call contracts. You know what they are. When I grew up, I want to be a, could be an insurance broker, a boxer, a lawyer, a doctor, a cop, whatever. Then we have another set of contracts. When I grew up, I'll never. And that's, I'll never use drugs. I don't want to smoke cigarettes because my grandfather died of cancer. My father was an alcoholic. So they have these contracts. And somewhere down the line, they hang out with these cool people. Or they're watching their older brother smoke a cigarette or whatever it is, a vape. And they take a hit. They just broke a contract. It's only a cigarette or a vape. I'll never use anything else. They're hanging out with the cool people. Somebody comes in the room and says, have one of these. They're cookies. There's pot in it. And they go, oh, my God, I don't want to use drugs. Well, it's not a drug. It's legal. It's marijuana. It's blah, blah, blah. And they convince themselves and they take it. And they and then they break other contracts. And they end up addicted to drugs. Today, they end up dead. So when they come into rehab, we're trying to get them back to those contracts. But they end up leaving and they break them. They die almost immediately. Do you know how many people I know that's gotten into rehab, got out, decided they're smarter than the drug? What happens is they get high. And their mind says, I'm not quite high enough. So they take a little bit more and their body can't handle it.
Right.
That's why we need to keep people on that, what you call math services, to knock that craving away. Because it's so freaking hard, as you said, to kick fentanyl and some of these other drugs that the urge and the impulse is so powerful, it's like live or die.
Right.
So you know, have to treat it different.
You have to treat it completely
Fentanyl's
different.
A freaking game changer.
But I think that the very start of how you go about this is through education and awareness.
Oh, it's got to be.
It has to be education and awareness, you know.
I mean, it's got to start young.
It has to start, I think.
It can't start in middle school.
No.
It's got to start in elementary school.
In elementary school. I think with sources that have been vetted by school officials or whatever it may be. Right. But, you know. Our foundation at Stop the Void, we've been traveling the nation giving education awareness seminars, not only to parents but also to children. And I have a stack of letters, and I've showed them to you before. And the kids are saying, thank you so much for coming out. We had no idea that was fentanyl right. And everything. Yeah. I go, now they do. You know. So
the message needs to be now, it's not fentanyl kills. Everybody knows that. The message needs to be different, doesn't it?
It sure does.
How about this? All drugs kill.
All drugs kill.
It's in all drugs.
It's in all drugs.
And there is no other real drugs, meaning every drug out there is?
Yeah, deadly.
Deadly.
If you get enough fentanyl in you, you're going to die. You know, and I hate to talk, but going back to the cannabis thing, you know, you're right. We legalized cannabis in the state of California, but due to the overregulation that happens in that industry, to have a dispensary, I had a client just to apply for the license cost $125,000. Mm-hmm. $125,000 from what I was told, just to apply for the license.
Right.
So we're not even talking about business insurance. We're not talking even about workers' comp, the building, all the other.
Just the license.
Just the license alone. And we're not even talking about all the other costs that come with it, which is why a lot of people who smoke cannabis or do the gummies and things like that feel like they can go to the black market and buy these products, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's going to be a lot less expensive than it would be had it gone to the dispensary.
And it is now because the cartel is now flooding that market.
So the cartels have flooded California with product that has not been tested, mm-hmm. that has not been, you know, certified, mm. and nobody knows what's in those gummies. Nobody knows what's in the cannabis. Nobody knows what's in those vapes. And people are dying now, too. Because
and let's not forget that.
What, one moment, really
yeah,
quick.
Yeah, go for
because
it.
It's not that they're trying to kill the children. What they're trying to do is they're trying to drive the addiction.
Right. And let's not forget that most of these dispensaries aren't even licensed.
That is very true.
So where are they getting it?
Exactly. Well, we already know where we're
getting it. Yeah. Do you know that if you – here's the latest. This is really scary. A lot of people – a lot of adults go to Mexico, Tijuana, and Sonora, right?
Oh, I've heard this.
And they're going to pharmacies to bring home Xanax and Soma and all those drugs. And they're sealed bottles. Guess what they're finding now?
Yeah. They're finding fentanyl in them, too.
They're bootleg in the sealed bottles now.
In the sealed
so
bottles.
So going into Mexico to buy bottles that are from a pharmacy – are now having traces of made with fentanyl.
And, you know, it's even scarier that we actually have insurance companies in order for them to cut their costs, yes, are allowing their clientele to actually buy pharmaceuticals in Mexico.
And they're not real.
And they're not real.
What is going on around here? Yeah, I mean, how do you deal with this stuff? So you could go to a pharmacy in another country, buy a sealed bottle of pills, and they're not real. That's where we're at today because they're so cheap to make.
It's a very scary world. It's a very, very scary world, and it's bleak. And I try to be an optimist, you know. But every time I hear of a new kid who's died due to fentanyl poisoning, you know, here in Santa Clarita and elsewhere in the country and in Southern California, it's like a kick in the gut.
You have the same kind of Facebook as I do, don't you? You get these messages every day.
Every single day I'm having a new parent reach out to me.
Every day.
Or anytime I come out on Fox News or CBS or CNN, somebody, I saw you on the news. Uh-huh. I just wanted to let you know that my child died. And so and so, and then and then, I want to join the fight too. What can I do? And that's something that needs to be talked about as well.
Talk about Matt for a second, because he's got something going on next month. He's doing something now. He's a friend of ours.
Matt Capuloto, who is the president of Drug Induced Homicide, is a national organization that is trying to get laws passed in the state of California where they will hold drug dealers accountable if they furnish or sell a pill or an illicit narcotic containing fentanyl to someone and that person dies, that person should actually, you know, pay for their crimes to society, right? As it is right now, there is no there are only 20 to 25 states that have drug-induced homicide laws on the books, anywhere from 6 months in some states to...
Not California.
To, yes, like Texas, that I believe is right, a 20-year minimum mandatory sentence. Which happens is that here in California, a lot of parents who lose their children to a fentanyl poisoning reach out to the feds, to the U.S. attorney, and want the Drug Enforcement Administration to get involved in their personal cases, mm-hmm, because there's a federal statute that if you, it can be proven that you furnished an illicit narcotic that took the life of another, it's a minimum mandatory 20-year federal prison sentence. So in California, when you read the news and you see an uptick on prosecutions and people getting 20 years, federal, it's all federal. It's nothing to state. In fact, Matt, through his organization, through drug-induced homicide, tried to get something called Alexander's Law. And Alexander's Law is named after his own daughter, Alexandra, who died in December of 2019. Due to a fake Percocet. Alexandra dealt with insomnia, had problems with insomnia, and had tried prescription Percocets before, and unfortunately went onto Snapchat, connected with a drug dealer who delivered the lethal pill, and she passed away, I believe, on December the 23rd, if I'm not mistaken, of 2019.
One pill.
And she was found dead by her sister.
How old was she?
I think Alexandra was 20 or 21. She was
a young kid.
Yeah. She's a young girl. She went to the University of Arizona, I believe on a full ride scholarship, just a very bright, beautiful young daughter, and she died as well. And Matt has been on a mission ever since to try to get drug-induced homicide laws passed in California. So much so that there's this one law, it's called Alexander's Law, that it was basically a law mirroring the Watson Rule. Do you know what the Watson Rule is?
Tell us.
The Watson Rule is if you are arrested for driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol, mm-hmm, before they release you from jail,
you got to sign something.
You have to sign a waiver, which basically states that if you are arrested for driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol again, and you caused an accident in which it took the life of another, you could be prosecuted, I believe, for murder in the first degree or involuntary manslaughter. But anyways, whatever the case, it is a very serious felony, and you're going to go away for 10, 15, 20 years. It's a very serious crime. So Matt, through his organization to drug-induced homicide, has been up to Sacramento various times. The first time that this law that he wanted to do for basically was Senate Bill 350 was the Alexander Law was basically
a law that mirrored the Watson rule, in which a drug dealer who was caught selling fake clone pills, right? And that person was arrested. That person, that drug dealer, would have to sign a waiver in which it stated, if we can prove that you continued selling these and took the life of another, then you can also be charged with voluntary manslaughter or murder.
It doesn't say you will. It says you can.
You can, exactly. So when the Senate Bill 350 went up to Sacramento, the Public Safety Committee, the Senate Public Safety Committee, which is the head or the president of the Public Safety Committee at the time, was Stephen Bradford, mm-hmm. out of Los Angeles, Sydney Kamlager, who's now she's now in Congress, Nancy Skinner, Scott Wiener, and all Democrats, and the only Republican on there was Roxalie Ochoa-Baugh out of UKIPA, just basically quashed the bill. It never even got out of the Public Safety Committee, and their contention was that this was just another failed attempt at the war on drugs, and also that it was... it's race war again. You know, it's all along those.
But now things are changing.
Well, not really.
Well, the feds are stepping up.
Well, because the feds have had to step up because of the amount of people who have died.
So
the Department of Justice, through the FBI and the Drug Enforcement Administration, right. are now taking these cases on because the state of California refuses to do so.
So every overdose now is looked at.
Every overdose is now looked at. We have an email from the Drug Enforcement Administration that people could write to and to have their cases looked at to see if anything could be done or if their justice could be done for their dead children. As far as the state of California goes, SB 350 was quashed. It didn't get out of committee. Then there's a new one. It's called SB 44, which is the exact same law called Alexander's Law. It's based on the same Watson rule type of notification for drug dealers that is about to go to the Public Safety Committee again this month, I believe, to see if they'll vote on that. But there was another one that it was the assembly bill that had the same thing, the same law mirroring the Watson rule, but that didn't pass. So they've already kicked that out of the assembly. Right. I feel that due to very unfortunate, I hate to get political, Kerry, but I have to. You know, I think we all just need to start a new party called the Common Sense Party because this is just crazy. I can't cuss online here, but...
you watch him.
No, I'm watching him right away.
Jerry will come running in. Carl will fall out of bed.
Everybody, they'll come after me. I feel like cursing right now, but I can't.
Yeah, I think
I think people understand. It's just that things have gotten a little bit too crazy where...
Because the problem is
that if we're not going to... Look.
We have a district attorney, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, let me just say it this way. Do I condone Daniel's wanting... my son Daniel wanting to use drugs? Absolutely not. But he certainly did not deserve to die for it.
Right. We're going to take a break. This is your Action Drug Rehab Hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Action Drug Rehab Hour. I'm Kerry Question. I am your host. And, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about everything we just talked about, right? And everything we've done. And to watch the hurt in you, it just kills me. It does. First of all, it kills me because I'm dealing with it every day with so many people that I care. But I love you. You're my buddy.
I know that.
And I loved your kid.
I know you did.
He was a great kid. And
fantastic.
And I hung out with your kid. I hung out with you. And then to see him lose his life the way he did and to feel your pain, it kills me.
You know, it's like I was saying is that, you know, do I condone Daniel's?
I mean, look at you. Yeah. How do you feel about all this? Our board op here. Jump in for a second.
Oh, it's astonishing, just all the numbers and everything. So I always knew it was high, but to actually know the numbers and everything like that,
it's your face. And you could see it on you. It's like, wow.
You know, like I was saying, I don't condone my son wanting to try drugs. But he certainly did not deserve to die for it.
And there are drug dealers out there who are knowingly and willingly selling fake counterfeit pills, making them pass off for pharmaceutical grade oxycodones, Percocets, Xanax bars, Vicodin, Adderall, and so many others, and they're dying, and they continue dealing this stuff because we have absolutely no state statute that holds these people accountable for their deaths, all in the name of social and racial justice. And that's just insane to me. I am as brown can be, okay? I am Colombian American, and I feel that if I were out there and I made bad choices in my life, or I am selling drugs and knowingly taking the lives of others just so that I can turn a profit, you need to go to jail.
Think about this for a
second. You need to go to jail.
Well, think about this. They're doing the pills, but ask yourself this. Why would a drug dealer selling cocaine put fentanyl in it? Why would a drug dealer selling ecstasy put fentanyl in it? How about, I mean, there's only one reason.
It's greed. They're driving the addiction. Because the problem with driving the addiction, and you've said this, and I've learned this from you many times, you could live with a heroin addiction 10, 15 years before your body started shutting down. Am I right?
Yes.
How long can you live with a fentanyl addiction?
Not that long, that's for sure.
In San Francisco, they're saying, if you're lucky.
That's what
if you're lucky.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, a year, maybe two.
If you're lucky, I mean,
if you're lucky,
because you don't. First of all, again, these are not chemists that are making this.
I've been trying to tell people I want to change the conversation from saying that fentanyl is a drug. I would rather people say that it's a poison. The reason why we're not really getting anywhere is because we keep lumping fentanyl in with heroin,
right,
with methamphetamine, and with all the other Scheduled One drugs. Yeah. Fentanyl is in a category in and of itself.
It's a game changer, period. It's a game changer in experimenting with drugs, recreation. It's a game changer in treatment.
In the 40 years that you have been in this space, have you seen anything as destructive as fentanyl, Kerry?
I've dealt with, first of all, I'm recovering 42 years.
Right.
And I've never, I mean, when we were kids, people didn't die unless, I mean, it was so rare. But I've seen the mini bennies and the bennies, and then the crack cocaine and the crystal meth and the cocaine and the black beauties and the quaaludes and the heroin and the opiates. This is not that. This is different than anything we have ever dealt with before. This is
so. How do we change?
I'll tell you.
How do we change this conversation? How do we get the feds?
I'll tell you.
How do we get the federal government and the state governments to classify this in and of itself?
By educating not just parents and kids about drugs, by educating the system about drugs. The more we scream, I've been screaming for 10 years, this is coming. You know that.
Yes.
I saw it 10 years ago starting to come. But by educating everybody, by more parents like you getting on TV doing what they're doing, by doing more radio shows, by bringing it into schools, by educating teachers, by doctors, lawyers, cops, judges, everybody. That's the only way we're going to do it. By becoming tough on the dealers. If somebody dies, put these freaking people in prison. Make it easier for people to go to treatment. That's how we're going to deal with this.
Rhode Island right now.
Oh, and one more thing.
Yes.
Allow doctors to write prescriptions for people who need meds.
Yes.
I hate to. No one talks about that.
Yeah, well, that and much, much more. I just did an interview on Fox News, and they wanted to ask me. Rhode Island's having a rash of deaths right now because of fentanyl. I mean, the state is being decimated by it. And they interviewed me asking me that there were other advocates that wanting a COVID-19 type of response to this crisis. And I agree 100%.
Yeah.
Because, you know, 80,214 drug deaths related to fentanyl and fentanyl-related substances alone in 2021 is not acceptable. That's not the true number. Even if you just take those numbers at face value, that's a 9/11 event every 2 weeks.
Yes.
That's a Boeing 737 of 300 passengers falling out of the sky on a daily basis. And yet here we are sitting on our hands.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
not talking about it? Because schools don't want to talk about it. Why don't we have this educate? Why isn't fentanyl mandated education? Why isn't fentanyl education mandated in our schools? I thank you, Kerry Quashin, and Joe Messina, for bringing our documentary into the William S. Hart Union School District, where all the students in the school district were able to see our documentary Dead on Arrival. The same thing happened in Simi Valley. They did it as well. There are some schools and across the nation where they've had other school districts watching, and we had great response to it. But why isn't it mandated?
We're working on
Where's the money for that?
We are working on that. We're going to, you and I, and we're going to do a whole lot more. But I do want to take a second, since you said that, to really compliment and give props to the Hart School District. Joe Messina, Mike, and all of them, I mean, they're really working on getting that word out. I had lunch with Mike, the superintendent, about doing other stuff in the schools, and Joe has been pushing for us to do that, and Kathy Hunter and Captain Diaz and everyone else. So we got a lot of good stuff coming. But I do want to remind people, on March 13th, what's going on March 13th?
On March 13th, Kerry Quashin with the Real Life Church and this station, KHTS, is having a candlelight vigil at Real Life Church in the early evening. I will be there speaking, as many other parents will be there. I hope you can all join us.
I want to thank you. Extra thanks for you to come here. And you know I love you lots.
I love you too.
And you're my brother from another mother.
Absolutely.
Give you a hug.
Thank you.
Thank you. Until next week, this is your Action Drug Rehab Hour. Please be safe out there.